Chelek Yud Beis, Parshas Achri. This week's Sicha is a Rashi Sicha on two Psukim in Perek Yud Ches of this week's Parsha. The Perek begins as follows. Pasuk Aleph, Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Lemar, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Pasuk Beis, Daber o Bnei Yisrael, V'yamarta Aleihem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. Pasuk Gimel. Kemaase Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yeshavtem Bo, Lo Yisasu. Like the practices of Egypt, where you once lived, don't do. Ukemaase Eretz Kanan, Asher Ani Mevi Eschem Shama, Lo Yisasu. And like the practices of the land of Kanan, where I am bringing you to, do not do. Ubechukeseihem, Lo Yitelechem. And don't follow their statutes. The Torah is speaking of the prohibition of incest. Rashi explains these words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, as, I am the one who said at Sinai that I am the Lord your God, and you accepted upon yourselves Malchusi, my sovereignty, so accept now Zeraisai, my decrees. Rashi then brings an additional explanation for the words Ani Hashem Elokeichem in the name of Rabbi. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, Goli v'yadua lefanov, it is openly known before him, before God, that in the days of Ezra, they would eventually disconnect themselves from God by transgressing the decree of Arayos with incestuous behavior. Lefichach, Ba aleihem begzeira ani Hashem lekechem. Therefore, God came to them with a decree, I am God, your God. Know who is placing these decrees upon you, the judge who exacts retribution, Elohim, but who is faithful also to reward Hashem. What difficulty did Rashi see in the simple words of the Pasuk that he felt it necessary to explain the words Ani Hashem Lekechem? Well, basically, we know this. After all, we left Egypt by God's mighty hand, received the Torah, and surely know that God is Hashem Elokeichem, our God. What is the chiddush here that is being repeated in these verses? And so Rashi says, this isn't a self-standing statement, since we already know this. Rather, it's a preliminary statement to what follows in the following verses. Since you accepted my sovereignty at Matan Torah, therefore you should accept my decrees and commands now. And the second reason, says Rashi, for these words, Ani Hashem, is that since eventually the Jewish nation would disconnect from God through incestuous behaviors, God is bringing this as a decree. In other words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem is an introduction for what follows in the Torah, and Ani Hashem Elokeichem is in itself a decree. The Rebbe asks several questions on the Rashi. In the beginning of Parshas Va'era, we read similarly, Vayedaber Elokim al Moshe, Vayomer Elov, Ani Hashem. And a question is warranted there as well. What is the chiddush there? And so Rashi comments, Ne'eman l'shalem schar l'mishalchim l'fanov. God faithfully rewards all who walk before him. And Rashi continues there, U'biloshein hazeh matzinu shehu nidrash bekama mekoymeis, ani Hashem ne'eman l'fara. And with this phrase, we see that this phrase comes frequently in many places. Ne'eman lifora, I am consistent to exact retribution, and ne'eman litein schar, and consistent or faithful to reward. The word Ani Hashem is explained in this way in several places. It would seem, then, that here too Ani Hashem should be explained in that way. Ani Hashem ne'eman lifora v'ne'eman l'shalem schar. Particularly since Rashi himself points this out, that this is how Ani Hashem is to be understood. And yet, once again in our parsha, Rashi pauses on these very words and explains them. But here, Rashi explains these words differently, adding that it is known to God that we will, in the time of Ezra, sin. A second question the Rebbe brings is, what does it mean when God says you accepted my malchus, my sovereignty, now accept my decrees? What is Kabbalas HaMalchus, accepting God's sovereignty without accepting divine decrees and commandments? Accepting God's sovereignty is accepting whatever the king commands. Like it says, you were taken out of Egypt, and the ultimate goal now is to be Mishubadim, subservient to me, to God. In other words, to serve God by actually fulfilling God's commandments. But here these two things, Malchusi and Gzeiroisai, my sovereignty and my mitzvahs, are divided. Furthermore, if Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, accepting God's commandments, is a separate thing to accepting God's sovereignty, then the command to accept God's mitzvahs should have been given before even the first mitzvah was commanded. A fourth question that Rebbe poses is, why does Rashi use the word gzeiroisai, my decrees, versus the commonly used mitzvoisai, my commandments? And then two classical questions on Rashi. When Rashi brings two or more explanations, it's indication that each answer on its own is somehow deficient. So what proof do these two bring that may be lacking in one or the other? As we know, Rashi only mentions the explanation in the name of the one who taught it when mentioning the name of the one who taught the explanation supplements our understanding of that explanation. How does mentioning the name of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi facilitate understanding the second explanation? The Rebbe queries as well the terminology Rashi uses in the second explanation. Generally, the act of transgression would be referred to with a word like la'avor, to transgress, or lichshel, to fail. Why in our circumstance does Rashi say lenatek, to become disconnected through sin? The questions now turn to the source of this second explanation of Rashi, which is brought in Teres Kayanim, where it says, quoting from Parshas Bahalaischa, Vayishma Moshe es ha'am boicha l'mishpachaisav. Moshe heard the nation crying over family matters, and Rashi explains this to mean that they were aggrieved that they could not intermarry with family members. They wanted to behave this way incestuously or did so. And also, a verse is brought from Malachi, from the prophet Malachi, who is Ezra, where the verse reads, V'zois shenis ta'asu kasois dima, and this second thing you do, covering the altar of God with tears. And here Rashi explains, this second thing was that Jewish men took and married Gentile women in addition to their wives, because their Jewish wives had become blackened from hunger and exile. In our parsha, however, in our psukim on Ani Hashem, Rashi only indicates the event that took place in the days of Ezra. So while this is sourced in Teres Kayanim, where it mentions both the Pasuk in Baal Eischa, as well as the event in the time of Ezra, in our Rashi, Rashi only brings down the event that is mentioned b'mei Ezra, and doesn't mention the events in the time of Moshe at all. This is compounded by the fact that Rashi himself explained the events that transpired in Moshe's time in Baal Eischa. Surely it would have been more seamless had Rashi mentioned the events of Parshas Baal Eischa, which was chronologically closer to the discussion in our Parsha, and less seamless to bring an example of an event of Arayos incestuous behavior in the days of Ezra about 1,000 years later. We can understand all of this with the following explanation. Even though Rashi had already explained Ani Hashem in Parshas Va'era as Ne'emon L'Shalem Schar Tov L'Mishalchem Lifnei Hashem, in our discussion, it's different. When concluding a tzivui, a specific idea, the pasuk may conclude with Ani Hashem, as in, I am your God who faithfully rewards those who go in my path. Having given a mitzvah, God finishes with Ani Hashem. But in our parsha, the order is reversed. Before Hashem even speaks of that which he wants Moshe to give over, Hashem says Ani Hashem, not as a conclusion, but at the very outset. And this is different to what we have seen previously. Rashi says, wherever the words Ani Hashem come to conclude something, these words have specific significance, and Rashi has explained that significance. But here, in our parsha, it's Ani Hashem at the outset. And so it isn't a warning about taking retribution or giving reward for that which Hashem has already said. Nothing has yet been said. So, says Rashi, here Ani Hashem serves as a commandment for itself. Just like at Matan Torah, Hashem said, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, with the intention that we accept God's sovereignty. The Ani Hashem here, says Rashi, is a commandment, not just an introduction. It's the statement, I am God, and you are obligated to take upon yourselves my decrees. At Sinai, as a nation, we took upon ourselves God's sovereignty and the mitzvahs. However, we must deduce that this isn't that same commandment to take God's sovereignty upon ourselves or the mitzvahs, but rather this is a new category of mitzvah that we had not yet been commanded to accept upon ourselves at Sinai, and it also wasn't included in the acceptance of all the mitzvahs. The mitzvah that follows this new commandment of Ani Hashem, take upon yourself my decrees, my gezeiros, is the prohibition of arayos, of incest. In other words, says the Rebbe, though at Sinai, Bnei Yisrael took upon themselves the fulfillment of Hashem's mitzvahs, it is nevertheless possible to say that at Sinai, they accepted only mitzvahs that seichel, human intellect, could absorb. But the mitzvahs that intellect would negate were not part of the Kabbalas Malchusei u'mitzvaysav, accepting God's sovereignty and mitzvahs. Therefore, before Hashem commanded this category of mitzvahs, that are a gzeira, a decree, he prefaced this with a warning to accept decrees from God in general, saying, I am the one who said at Sinai, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and you accepted upon yourselves my sovereignty, accepting to fulfill mitzvahs, so now and henceforth accept my decrees, those mitzvahs which are gezeiros. Why is this commandment of Arayos called a gezeira, a decree? If we look into Torah, we see that historically, before the giving of the Torah, family certainly married family. As a matter of fact, the Torah speaks lengthily about Aaron's wife, who was Elisheva, the sister of Nachshon ben Aminadav. And Rashi teaches us in connection with this the value of pedigree of Yuchsin, that one should find out and look into a girl's brothers when considering her for a shidduch. We also know that Avram sent Eliezer to search for a wife for Yitzchak from his birthplace and his family, because a family member is a more likely and suitable match. Also, the purpose of marriage is pru uravu, to fulfill the mitzvah of procreation, to become one flesh v'na'asu levasar echad, manifest in the progeny of a couple. But the laws of arayos, the decrees against incestuous behavior, are the exact opposite. This goes even further. Hashem created the world in such a manner that its existence and sustainability depended on Adam's sons marrying their sisters. Yaakov married sisters, and his legacy, his offspring, were dafka specifically mitasei shlema, complete. Aaron's wife Elisheva was his aunt, and they bore Miriam, that would be Amram's wife Elisheva, was his aunt, and they bore Miriam, Aharon, and Moshe. No, Elisheva was Aharon's wife. Amram's wife, of course, was Yocheved. Amram's wife, Yocheved, was his aunt, and they bore Miriam, Aharon, and Moshe, all seemingly blessed unions. So this new Isur, the prohibition of this, was similar to the experience of the Akedah, where God had promised Avraham that B'Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazera, that Yitzchak would bring forth his offspring and his future, and then he was asked to sacrifice him until he wasn't. And therefore, there was a specific commandment on accepting decrees in general, Ani Hashem, and then Itzivui anarayos in particular, which could not be understood by human logic, particularly because this was an acceptable way and even a favored way to live and to bring children to the world. This is all by way of explaining the first Rashi, and yet it remains unclear. The nation of Israel accepted the Torah. We were Mekabel Malchus at Sinai and Mekabel Mitzvahs. Why weren't we commanded on the Gzeiros, the decrees, at that time as well? Why were they divided into different categories in different times? The Mitzvahs, acceptable to Seichel, et Matan Torah, and in our Parsha, where we are commanded with Gzeiros. There's another issue here. Even before Matan Torah, and even Bnei Noach were forbidden in incestuous relationships with their very closest family members. And this was a decree to which more mitzvahs were added at Matan Torah, to which they said, Naase. And therefore Rashi brings the second explanation, that Ani Hashem Elokecha is a hakdama, an introduction to what comes next, and not a statement that stands on its own. Therefore, Ani Hashem comes at the beginning of the commandment and not at the end, emphasizing that Hashem comes to them with a gzeira. With a continuance of generations, Hashem knew that we would falter in this decree, and so he begins with, Ani Hashem, know who decrees this upon you, I who judge and punishes and rewards. The reason that Arayos requires a special decree is understood in Rashi's unusual usage of the word linatek ba'arayos, to become disconnected through the sin of incest. The term lenatek, to become disconnected from God, means to become torn away, truly separated. In the situation as it was in the days of Ezra, that Jewish men took non-Jewish women because the Jewish wives were blackened by the pain of hunger and exile, the full reality of lenatek was forborne. And this is why Rashi brings this example of the time of Ezra, despite the historical distance in generations. For a child born of an incestuous relationship is still Jewish, but one born from a non-Jewish woman is not, and one's bloodline becomes cut off, disconnected from God. So while in this portion they were not yet commanded against Be'ilas Nachris, sexual relations with a non-Jewish woman, and they were just commanded against Arayos, incestual relationships, nevertheless, because of the severity of the effect and the cutting off of a person from God, this too was mentioned in Rashi. On its own, however, says the Rebbe, this second explanation is not the smoothest explanation, because it's really hard to suggest that the intention of the introductory verse of Ani Hashem Elokecha was for the purpose of forewarning an event that would take place years hence, and therefore Rashi requires the first explanation to come first. But to clarify the second explanation, that Torah would bring Ani Hashem Elokechem just to forewarn an event so far in the future, we look at who said the second Pirush. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, wrote the Mishnah, having been granted permission to write down the halachas lest they be forgotten, chas v'shalom. And eis la'asais la'Hashem heferu teresecha, a time to do what was needed for God so that Torah should not be forgotten. As the generations became weaker, and Torah was, God forbid, being lost. And so Rebbe explains this verse, said by David HaMelech in Tehillim, Eis la'asais la'Hashem heferu teresecha, written over 1,000 years earlier. Rebbe brings this pasuk as the call of the hour for the writing of the Mishnah. And so in the second explanation of Rashi, said in the name of Rebbe, we understand that Rebbe was able to reference a historical reality, drawing it all the way back to its origin years earlier. And so Rebbe references the time of Ezra, connecting it to the pasuk that begins with Ani Hashem, and the decree that begins with Ani Hashem Elokecha in our parsha. In this way, both of Rashi's explanations supplement and complete one another.